Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, Mill Creek View podcast listeners and watchers on Rumble. I have another great guest for you focused on our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Robin Steenman. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Tennessee Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Robin Steenman. Robin Steenman is with... According to CNN's Evan McMorris Santoro, Robin Steenman pulled her daughter out of public school over a mask mandate last year, 2020. She's now in private school and misses public school, but Steenman is keeping her out not because of masks, but because of lessons plans she says make students feel bad about their race. The school bus goes right in front of my house and my kid is dying to ride it, she told CNN, but not until I have deemed that the curriculum is safe and will do no harm. Steenman is counting on a new Tennessee law to force schools to end that curriculum and ban at least one book in the elementary school library written from the perspective of Mexican Americans. The former fighter pilot leads the Williamson County chapter of Moms for Liberty in this wealthy Republican-leaning suburb of Nashville. She says her group has ballooned in size since April 2021, from less than 20 parents meeting at her house to more than 3,000 connecting on Facebook. The chapter has grabbed headlines for belligerent protests at school board meetings. That's their words, not mine. They have attacked a high school's pride float. One tweet wondered if students passing our pride literature were doing recruitment. And another meeting featured a tirade by a Moms for Liberty member against a children's book about the lives of seahorses, which she said was too sexual. But the group's main concern is how American history is taught in school, particularly to younger kids. In a multi-page complaint to the State Department of Education, Moms for Liberty says the Williamson County Schools curriculum violates state law because it includes anti-American, anti-white, and anti-Mexican teachings. In May, Governor Bill Lee signed HB 580, a law aimed at banning so-called critical race theory from schools. Educators argue that critical race theory is not taught on curriculum in the K through 12 classes and is usually an elective class in college or law school. Section 51, Part 6 of the Tennessee law makes lesson plans illegal if students feel discomfort, guilt, or anguish. Steenman says the Williamson County curriculum makes students feel bad about their race, meaning the law should invalidate it. That was CNN. Hello, Robin. How are you holding up post-Snowmageddon Christmas 2022?
We're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's sunny and beautiful today. Are you from Texas or were you just stationed there?
Originally from Texas.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. And what made you choose Williamson County, Tennessee to move to?
My husband separated from the Air Force and we decided to make a home here.
Wonderful. I've got 7 pages of questions here and there's no way to get through it all in one show. So hopefully you'll come back often, but let's try. Okay.
Let's do it.
did you ever think this fight over school books would go on this long?
No.
No. That CNN piece mentioned seahorses and making students feel bad. It's worse than cute animals and the feels, isn't it?
It is. It's it's a very nuanced topic that you need to pay attention to the details. And CNN just, and all the mainstream media, they choose to gloss over it at a very high level, you know, as somebody used to say, the drive-by media, and not choose to not understand the issue, even though I spent about an hour with CNN helping them to understand the issue. Doesn't play to their audience to actually expose it.
No, you and your group are definitely one of those folks that are used and abused in the media to try to make a point that is not really true to what you're actually doing, where they try to say things negative about you when actually all you're trying to do is help out. It also said one book in the library was an offending one, but now we've seen in those 2 years, it's many more books about not just history, but sexuality and racism they want kids exposed to and without parental consent. Yes. The 10 most challenged books in 2021 was Genderqueer by Maya Kobabi, banned, challenged, and restricted for LGBTQIA plus content and because it was considered to have sexually explicit images. Lawn Boy by Jonathan Evison, banned and challenged for LGBTQIA plus content and because it was considered to be sexually explicit. All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson, Out of Darkness, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, The Absolute True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. I think I read that in high school. I can't even remember. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, The Bluest Eyes, Think This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson, and Beyond Magenta by Susan Cucklin. That's more than one book. That's 10. Did you discover all of these, or how did they come into the common knowledge that this is a problem?
Well, what we're talking about is a little bit two separate issues. So what we started with, that book about the Mexican children, that's actually a curriculum book that the children are exposed to by requirement for their English language arts in the classroom for many days in a row. And the books that you're talking about are ones that the children may encounter in the library, which in a school library, parents cannot gain access to. So that's an unsupervised environment where a child can check out any book that they want. And many of those books that you just mentioned are outright pornographic. And, you know, I've done several news interviews with local news entities, and they were very anxious to get me to speak about these library books because they were very anxious to paint me as a book banner. And they thought it'd be really easy to do so. But the interviews that I've done, they could never quite put me in that corner because all I have to do is show them excerpts from these books. And it's not, you know, it's not Catcher in the Rye. It's not Huckleberry Finn. It is pornographic, X-rated material, and not even pornography in a traditional sense. It is very dark sexual content with rape, gang rape, incest, sodomy, pretty much nothing hetero. It's all homosexual acts and involving young children. And, you know, there's even a book that's been in a Williamson County high school that features the repeated rape of a 7-year-old girl by her father.
Oh, geez.
And none of the English in this book is even correct. It's written in very broken, incorrect English. And one must wonder, who finds literary value in this book? Maybe not even literary value, but what groups value this book and why is it on the shelf?
Well, that's a good question. Are they all the same publisher? I didn't look, or at least the same genre of publishing houses that would obviously profit from colorful imagery and all the rest, or is it just every publisher out there is doing it now because it's where the market is?
A little bit of both. When you start looking into it, which I have not fully done a deep dive into the library issue yet, that's coming in March.
Okay.
As far as the pipeline and how it flows and who's funding. But it's a lot of from like Scholastic, for instance. You know, when I grew up, you get the little Scholastic newspaper with all the books and we're always excited for the Scholastic book fair. Like everybody remembers that.
Sure.
And when my kids brought home their first Scholastic newspaper, I was thrilled because, yay, it's something, you know, that I love from my childhood. Scholastic is responsible for many of those books going into the library. They'll donate it to the librarians. And, you know, there's a lot of woke librarians out there that embrace this stuff, but there's a lot of librarians that assume that, hey, Scholastic just gave me a book. I'm sure it's fine. I'll put it on the shelf. And for instance, there's a library in Tennessee where that's how me, Earl, and the Dying Girl got on the shelf, was from Scholastic.
Well, there is a source then for sure.
I saw the Library Association is very woke. There's an agenda and an ideology that flows from on high.
I saw a video today, actually, of a librarian with 6 grandkids, she said, I think before a Moms for Liberty meeting, actually. And she said she was constantly getting threats and that parents should go to libraries with their young kids and watch what they check out. That's the solution to this. I guess that's her case against removing books versus banning books. What do you think of librarians and their coalition with the American Library Association and their willingness to stock the books in the first place, as if all books should be allowed regardless of age appropriateness?
Well, the thing about it, a school library, so a public library is a little bit of a different entity, although the Murray County Library down in Columbia has experienced a lot of controversy over their Pride Month display that was marketed towards small children. But in the school library, there is no parental supervision. And if you have this graphic, objectionable content, obviously there is going to be a large percentage of households that will object to their child reading such material, and some parents that, for whatever reason, embrace it, right? But those parents that object should have the ability to object. They should have the ability to say that's not appropriate. And this is, like I said, a school library. So, and it's taxpayer funded. So, one of our solutions that we're working on is that we have a rating system. It's not ours, it's one that we've adopted from another entity where a book is rated on a scale of 1 to 5. And 5 is rare. 5 is reserved for the really awful ones. But anything, like a 3, 4, or a 5 for graphic content, perhaps a parent could pre-sign a permission slip that stays, on file at the library that my child can check out a 5, or my child can only check out a 1. And that's a solution that we have, because just removing these books from the library is not making a lot of headway, although Sumner County School Board has stepped up and removed a couple ones, such as Lawn Boy, I believe.
Oh boy, that was on the list.
Right.
Yeah,
And
it's almost like the MPAA ratings for movies, right? If you're over 17, you can go see an R movie, but if you're under, you cannot, or something of that nature, unless you have a parent with you. The American Library Association has reported 681 challenges to more than 1,600 titles this year. That's more than 10, obviously. That puts this year, 2022, on track to see the highest number of book challenges in decades. Obviously, this is a new phenomenon, and parents are just now alerted to this. So I can see why that would be the highest in decades. But that's a lot of books, 1,600 titles. Their statement said, if you bear with me while I read this real quick, librarians should strive to support their patrons' constitutional rights by upholding the following positions. Conformity is perhaps natural to a time of accelerated change, and yet suppression is never more dangerous than in such a time of social tension. That's from the American Library Association. One, it is in the public interest for publishers and librarians to make available the widest diversity of views and expressions, including those that are unorthodox, unpopular, or considered dangerous by the majority. Two, publishers, librarians, and booksellers do not need to endorse every idea or presentation they make available. It would conflict with the public interest for them to establish their own political, moral, or aesthetic views as a standard for determining what should be published or circulated. Three, it is contrary to the public interest for publishers or librarians to bar access to writings on the basis of the personal history of political affiliations of the author. Four, there is no place in our society for efforts to coerce the taste of others, to confine adults to the reading matters deemed suitable for adolescents, or to inhibit the efforts of writers to achieve artistic expression. Five, it is not in the public interest to force a reader to accept the prejudgment of a label characterizing any expression or its author as subversive or dangerous. They're not answering the question on pornography or graphic material. They're just talking about everything that's artistic should be available to everyone at all times. Number six, it is the responsibility of publishers and librarians as guardians of the people's freedom to read to contest encroachments upon that freedom by individuals or groups like yours seeking to impose their own standards or tastes upon the community at large, and by the government whenever it seeks to reduce or deny public access to public information. And then lastly, it is the responsibility of publishers and librarians to give full meaning to the freedom to read by providing books that enrich the quality and diversity of thought and expression. By the exercise of this affirmative responsibility, they can demonstrate that the answer to a bad book is a good one. The answer to a bad idea is a good one. What in the heck is the American Library Association thinking by putting something like that
It's a giant word salad.
out? It's a
I
word
would
salad,
counter
but it's
with a
certainly
single
saying
point.
that they are the arbiters of all things literature, not necessarily age-appropriate material.
I would counter with a single point to the word salad from the ALA is it is a felony to expose a minor child to pornographic content.
Absolutely right. So they're using that word salad as their defense for that.
And that's what, you know, that's what the left does. It's word salad constantly. Yeah. I mean, even diversity, equity, inclusion. Oh, it sounds so good. Do you realize how, what a battle that was to take the scales off of people's eyes to understand that these lovely sounding words are actually a Pandora's box for a lot of unlovely things.
Yeah. Is we it call actually- it diversity, inclusion, and equity here. DIE. D-I-E.
It's the formula for a new form of, it's formula for neo-racism.
Yeah, racism. And they're definitely circling the wagons against censorship and likening to the Nazi book burning or sacking the library at Alexandria instead of just protecting children from harmful age inappropriate material.
Well, would a librarian go and feel comfortable with showing a child a video of what these books portray? Because they really would be arrested on felony charges, because that would be exposing a minor child to pornographic content. And in a public library where adults go and check out books, perhaps that would be in the adult section. But these are school libraries where the exclusive clientele is children, minor children.
Right.
And books that are pornographic have no business being there.
They do the drag queen story hours, though, at least not.
I know.
Maybe they don't in Williamson County that I know of. Maybe you would know better, but they have done it nationally. We've seen it on video, and those are very explicit. So it's not video, like you say, is a felony, but it is age inappropriate live action versus what we're now talking about is live age inappropriate books on display and pushed. Williamson County Library, since we let's bring it down to our hometown here, they back what's called Banned Book Week. After schools remove a book, the sign reads, "This library celebrates Banned Book Week." The display inside the Williamson County Public Library is a public showcase of leadership stance on controversial material, and it previews a renewed focus on supporting banned books Monday to Saturday, September 18th through 24th, so a few months ago. Less than a mile away, Williamson County education officials recently made the decision under pressure from Moms for Liberty, a conservative parent advocacy group, to remove a book from the elementary school curriculum and make instructional adjustments for seven other books. The local decision was made a few months before state lawmakers also passed a bill, I want to talk about that, challenging controversial books in school. We believe it is an important week to highlight that we support intellectual freedom, said Jessica Jeffers, the county's new library director. Williamson County Public Library supports patrons' access to a wide variety of materials, even if the content may be controversial, unorthodox, or unacceptable to others, as stated in our collection development policy. Banned Book Week is an annual national event sponsored by multiple organizations dedicated to free expression, including the American Library Association. There they are again. Jeffy Nicholson, the library's adult service manager, said she believes the library has set up a banned book support display for nearly 20 years. The library's policy includes language with the following excerpts. I won't read all that right now. Have you run across these two people, and are they part of the problem or the solution?
Well, again, it's the public library, you know, which also markets towards adults. And in a public library, ideally, a minor child is going and checking out books in the presence of a guardian or a parent. You know, so it's a little bit different, again, than a school library where they're just have unfettered access to whatever's on the shelf. But as far as, you know, I would challenge one of those librarians to read that excerpt from All Boys Aren't Blue. Let's have a story hour. I dare you to read it, where one minor boy sodomizes another in graphic detail. Read that out loud and tell me that book should be marketed towards children.
Yeah, I've heard where parents or caregivers, I guess, have gone to school board meetings and stood there and tried to read the material and were shut down for how graphic it was, but yet they allow it in the schools. Yep. You've been
that,
on the front lines like that.
Williamson County. Yep.
Exactly right. You were there at that meeting, right?
I was not there at that meeting. That was actually not led by Moms for Liberty. That was led by another parent group that we try to be a little more deliberate and get all of our ducks in a row before we, you know, move forward on something. And they were ready to go right then. We weren't. So I applaud them for doing it. But they organized parents to go up and read excerpts. And 100% Williamson County muted them.
Neutered them, yeah, or actually tossed them out. So let's talk about. Oh,
and
go
the
ahead.
Thing was, it was asked of Carol Birdsong, why did you mute the parents? And she said that we would be fined by the FCC if we permitted that to go out. So it's like, let me get this straight. You know, I mean, the irony is insane. You know, I can't read it without being fined by the FCC, but it should be, you know, available to my child without my permission.
Right. It's the Department of Education and the Federal Elections Commission or the Federal Communications Commission not talking to each other, I guess, about the graphic nature. So let's talk about Moms for Liberty a little bit more. It came out of kind of nowhere, but now I believe as of this year, 110,000 members, 260 chapters in 43 states. Don't know why I'm not 50, but 43 states for now. 275 school board seats were won in the November election. Is that right? All
yes.
Right. So positive change happening. 56 school boards flipped. 6,743 children's books donated to schools. Curious about that. 75,000 pocket constitutions donated to classrooms. That's amazing. 1,500 national and local press hits, which you have been on many of those yourself. Just give us a little rundown on the past, present, and future of Moms for Liberty.
Well, Moms for Liberty started nationally in January of 2021. And I started our chapter in April of 2021. And that was with 19 original members that met at my house, just strangers that came together for a cause, a concern for the school. And I called this meeting because I was aware that our schools had hired a diversity, equity, inclusion consultancy. And I, at that point, I had already withdrawn my daughter from kindergarten because I did not want her masked all day, every day. So, you know, by and large, at that point, you know, Williamson County is not my problem. So I wasn't really paying attention, but I did see a newspaper article that said that they'd hired a consultancy. And the thing is that I was very aware of what DEI does to any institution that it touches. It truly rots it from the inside out. It destroys morale. It destroys true equality. It destroys meritocracy. And institutes racism and a form of socialism under the guise of equity. So that's when I started to really sit up and say, somebody must say something, because there are 40,000 students in Williamson County schools, and the population of Williamson County is roughly 250,000. So if you implement a policy like that, then you are essentially sending this stuff home to poison 40,000 households, roughly. And that's how you rot a whole county from the inside out. And that is when I said, hold on, you know, and I did my first public comment for the school board in March of 2021. And I assumed that the school board just didn't know the Pandora's box that they were about to open. Because like I said, these words, they sound great. It was very in vogue and on the moment, you know, on point to implement a DEI policy. And, maybe we just need to shine a light on this. And I warned them in my 2 or 3 minutes that I had, please beware that this is a very slippery slope that you're stepping out on. And once you slide down it, there are very dark things at the bottom, and I don't have to make them up. All I have to do is do a little research into California or Chicago or New York, and I can tell you exactly where this ends up. And we don't want to do this in Williamson County. Well, the school board, you know, deaf ears. Because I'm just a parent, what do I know? I'm clearly not very smart. So then I started to talk to other parents, and it was a flashpoint. So we came together to stop this policy from being implemented, because it is critical race theory. It racializes children. Children at these young ages have no defense against this. They do not have the bird's eye view of history. They cannot put these things in context. So, you know, a child that, you know, received a visit from Santa Claus just a few days ago, and will get a visit from the Easter Bunny in a few months, you know, and still gets money under their pillow from the Tooth Fairy, and you're going to teach them this hardcore racism and expect them to have the context in order to, you know, not see their, you know, black or brown, you know, best friend in a different light now? You're ruining children at a young age, and they're defenseless. And that's where I sit up and say, no, you can't. Adults should know better. Children are defenseless. So we started on this journey to stop it, but very soon into it, we became aware of a biracial child. He's half Thai and half white, who had been racialized in Williamson County schools. And it was tragic to hear the accounts from the parents about he was suddenly ashamed of his skin color. He's ashamed to be white. He was ashamed of his white dad. His grandparents only wanted to be Thai. And that's what it does to small children. They don't, they're defenseless, like I said. So that's when we said, hold on, CRT, critical race theory, is clearly already here. So then the parents formed a deep dive team, and roughly 30 parents read 1,200 hours worth of books. Well, I mean, the first thing they did was they looked at that module that had damaged the racialized the second grade student. It was egregious. It is critical race theory, just not, you know, the CRT is just not on the book cover, but it is. And so the parents were horrified at this module. So then they looked at every module from kindergarten to fifth grade, because this was the first year that this curriculum, Wit and Wisdom, was implemented. And there's a lot of parents in various different grades saying, you know what, my spidey sense, this book isn't quite right, but it's probably just me, and it's probably just this one book, and everything else is probably fine. Well, when you take the 30,000 foot view of all of these books in this curriculum, and you find that the whole thing end to end is quite toxic to children by design. And there are common threads in this curriculum to include cannibalism, a soft intro to gender fluidity to first graders, racial racism, anti-Americanism, graphic death, graphic mating, graphic, it's just very deep, heavy topics that depressed children. Many parents talked about the how their children's demeanor changed, because you're marinating them in very negative content for 90 minutes a day every day. So that's what started our journey, is kind of thrust into a whole other direction that I never really planned on going, was taking on this curriculum. And then you further find out that the curriculum was corruptly and illegally adopted, because it was a favorite of our woke commissioner of education, and it was pushed into 33 counties when it never passed state standards.
I want to talk about her in detail in a second, but I have a question for you. Why aren't more teachers, school boards, superintendents, union members, officials of the schools, why aren't they the front lines against this? Why are we not seeing a 90% rate of not compliance, as opposed to such a huge amount going with it? It's not like it's been being taught for 150 years. This isn't Howard Zinn's textbook about anti-Americanism. This is a whole nother evil, demonic, transhuman, I should say, thing for infants and children. Why are there not mass resignations, strikes, people up in arms on the news every night saying no more?
Well, I mean, it's been making the news how teachers, there's an exodus of teachers. Williamson County Schools has been kind of the crown jewel of Tennessee up until this point. You know, I wasn't around in this time, but I was told that for a teacher to get hired at Williamson County was a big deal.
Yeah.
There was a waiting list. Like, you, it was a kind of a big deal to get in. Now they can't fill their classrooms.
Interesting.
They can't fill their classrooms. There are classrooms that are teacherless. There are, you know, one of our members, she's got middle school kids, and the teacher up and left in, I believe, April, March or April of last year, with only a few months to go, because she just had it.
Was it a public protest to this stuff, or was it more the kids are violent, or COVID is dangerous to me? Like, there's so many reasons to leave a profession. Is it something like, I can't take this curriculum anymore, we're doing bad, we're doing harm to children?
I think it is a bit of a brew of things. I think with this curriculum, there's teachers that have told me privately that it just wrecks them to have to push this on children. You have, with restorative justice, that's a topic that we're taking on this coming month. Teachers don't feel safe in the classrooms because there's no discipline. So teachers receive death threats, verbal threats, and even physical abuse. And this is a kind of an across the country thing. And there's no recourse or discipline for these children. So teachers feel unsafe. They feel unsupported. So you've got a lot of parents that perhaps are frustrated with what their children are being taught, But on the flip side, from the central office, they're saying, thou shalt teach this with faith and fidelity. And that if you deviate, then you're in big trouble. We had, was it four teachers at Edmondson Elementary that were crushed by the machine last May because it was found out that they were teaching a different phonics component to supplement the Wit and Wisdom curriculum. And they were suspended without pay. And then I think they had to like reverse it because the punishment was just far too harsh. And then demeaning emails were sent out to all the parents talking about these horrible teachers that dared to teach their children a different phonics component. Never mind that Wit and Wisdom failed for the phonics component. So
obviously an ulterior motive for the whole thing. Did you ever uncover the origin? Like, who's getting rich off of this while public schools go broke and lose kids to private and charter schools?
Well, the education industry is a lot like the defense industry. It's multi-billion dollars. There's so much money in it, but it's not going to the kids. I mean, if you look at, we have, you know, some diagrams posted on our social media back in October, I think it was, where, you know, the increase of students and teachers was along the lines of 7%, just like, you know, very gradual. But then the bureaucracy is just not quite hyperbolic, but just outpacing it by like 20 to 1. So every school has, I have no idea how many assistant principals, you know, and how many assistant superintendents and how much bureaucracy Williamson County keeps hiring.
And they want to get rid of the resource officers. So that money obviously gets reallocated to some other layer of bureaucracy.
You know, this cocoon of bureaucracy that surrounds the children.
Can we place some of the blame on some of the money that came post-COVID? I know the third one came with a lot of strings attached, although as a percentage of the budget, it's not very high. So they kind of sold us out for cheap, right?
That's the problem with federal dollars, because the federal dollars for a long time have had many strings attached. That's how social emotional learning got into our schools. And social emotional learning is another one of those candy coated phrases. Wow, you know, we're teaching your kids how to handle their emotions and to be upstanding citizens and like be nice to everybody, and it's going to be great. You know, there's social emotional, but it's not. It's very dark. It's very negative. It's designed to create emotional beings, actually. And that's another thing that we found that Wit and Wisdom does. It is a English language arts curriculum that is hyper focused on emotions, instructs the teacher to talk about their emotions from a story, ask the students about their emotions. And I'm like, this is reading and writing. Why are we talking about emotions so much? And the teacher's manuals go out of their way to create, even if a story is positive, they will find a way to make it negative and to talk about the emotions. You know, there's one book, it's called Bojangles. It's in kindergarten. And it's about a black man, Bojangles, who dances his way from cover to cover. And he's always got a smile on his face. And it's an uplifting story about success after hard work. And I think it's a great book. I let my daughter read it. But Wit and Wisdom creates this like puppet exercise where it's one puppet's asking another puppet about Bojangles, but the other puppet doesn't respond how puppet one wants them to. And this puppet gets so angry. And then it instructs the teacher to talk about the emotions and the anger and frustration of these puppets because there wasn't any in the book. That is how emotionally focused this curriculum is. And that is social emotional learning. And when did that happen? Under Obama. Because he passed the, I believe it was the Every Student Succeeds Act in 2012. And it was one of those, you know, oh, let's pass it and see what's in it. And it mandated social emotional learning, tied it to federal dollars. Therefore, the schools are scrambling for the federal dollars. And who was waiting in the wings? Castle, the collective association, I think, for social emotional learning, waiting in the wings saying, ah, but we have all these SEL programs for you to help you fulfill this federal requirement. We're so great. And then schools bring it in. Pretty much 100% of the school districts now have SEL because of that federal act, because of the federal dollars. And now our kids are just marinating in toxic, negative content.
And that's why the superintendents and the school board members will nod their heads while they're being yelled at, but there's absolutely nothing they can do about it because it's above their pay grade to actually get rid of things. Is that wrong? Or
if you have a school board that was going to stand up and say, you know what, I don't need the federal dollars, we're just going to do what's right, And that requires spine and backbone and courage. Yeah. And those things are short supply.
And Williamson County has the funds where they could possibly say, we'll just go it alone. But most of them, like in Memphis, they're barely hanging on there. They don't even have sports teams anymore. Funny.
Up until this year, I mean, many school boards were just fully staffed by liberals and leftists in conservative counties because, you know, I can tell you from personal experience, I'm a busy mom. I don't have time for this. I really don't. And that's how a lot of us are. We focus on our families and our work and our kids and who, you know, those that are focused on their ideology and the future of their ideology and the pushing of their ideology on young minds, they're the ones up until now that have been running for school board. So many of these school boards aren't really interested in saying no and passing up the federal money because it's 100% in line with their own ideology.
Makes sense. So Moms for Liberty had some amazing victories last month, all across the country with school board elections and getting kid first candidates onto them. Are you looking at more races in 2023? And what about the superintendents? In general, they seem to be in favor of this anti-family curriculum too.
Well, there was a school board in South Carolina. I'm trying to think of the county. Starts with a B. Can't think of it. But they took over their school board, and their first school board meeting, they fired their superintendent and banned critical race theory.
Nice.
That did not happen in Williamson County. There's a fair amount of voter apathy around here. So even despite the uproar over our own school board, turnout was low.
Yes.
Which is shocking because even without the school issues, people should go to the gas pump and say, holy cow, I am paying attention now. I'm going to vote for everybody right down to the dog catcher. You know, and that turnout didn't reflect that in Williamson County. And also in Moms for Liberty, you know, in the states where the Republican Party embraced Moms for Liberty, like Florida and in South Carolina, you know, they really allied themselves and they were a force to be reckoned with. Here in Williamson County, our Republican Party really kind of declared us as the enemy. So there's a fracturing, you know, on the conservative right. And there's people that are busy that are caught in the middle. And they have no idea, you know, what to do. Yeah. So, we had some success with the school board elections, but not near as much had the Republican Party, you know, partnered with not just Moms for Liberty, but multiple grassroots. They really, you know, like Tennessee Stands, for instance, they really can't stand Tennessee Stands or Moms for Liberty or any of those, you know, grassroots conservative groups. And that's
unfortunate. I'll tell you, from coming from Washington State, the bluest of the blue states, I fought the same fight too in the Catholic schools and in the Jewish synagogues. And my biggest problem was the parents. They were in favor of this. Some of them, I'd show them the pornographic sex ed course material, and they'd say, well, yeah, you know, I learned sex ed when I was a kid. You didn't learn it like this. You know, this is like Hustler magazine, or this is just beyond what it should be, and you don't need your teachers parenting your kids like that. Here, I thought, oh, it'll be the exact opposite. Everybody will be pushing back. It'll be tossed out. I'm not so sure that's the case. How did we get to a place where a veteran like you can be on the outs with the Department of Justice and the FBI accusing moms of being domestic terrorists, literally, for pushing back against the teachers union and the school boards?
I don't think the answer is really me. It's the answer is what happened to our government.
Yes. Yes. What did happen is just policy is personnel. They put all the right people in there to say, let's pick on little Williamson County and all the counties across the country and make them conform.
I mean, early on in my life, I signed a dotted line that said, if ordered to do so, I give my life for my country. And that's the faith that I put in my commander in chief and my commanding officers and the military. And it's the ultimate sacrifice and service, right, to the country. And then now my country considers me a domestic terrorist. So tell me who's changed.
Exactly right. Well said. So Governor Lee backed age-appropriate law, quote-unquote age-appropriate law, that passed this year. The board is discussing how to review and possibly remove books from school libraries. That's what you're after. How have your meetings with Governor Lee and Penny Schwinn gone? We've got about 5 minutes left. I'm never going to get through all these questions.
Well, we'll have to do it again. There's a lot to say on that. So I do want to say something before I go.
Go for it.
But with Governor Lee and Penny Schwinn, neither are really particularly fans of parents or parental rights. And that's the bottom line. So he can go on Hannity and talk about his anti-CRT bill or the Age Appropriate Materials Act or his library bill, which I would like to point out has only emboldened the woke librarians with this content in the school. There is it's a veritable trash heap of bills that sound really good, but do nothing. And the proof is in the pudding because they've done nothing.
So a spokesman for the school board in Williamson County told CNN that school leaders in the county have launched a reconsideration committee to review the books Moms for Liberty has complained about. One board member familiar with the process said new Tennessee law is hard to interpret, but this board member said they expect the state will ban at least one of the books Moms for Liberty cited. That was in 2021. Whatever came of that reconsideration committee?
They removed one book from the curriculum out of concern for the book and not the kids. They said that if we chop this book up and teach only the appropriate parts, that the book itself is just damaged. So we're going to remove it. But, you know, here's the thing is we started, you know, on the DEI policy, and then we quickly transitioned to the CRT and the curriculum. And then we, talked about the toxic curriculum, which really blew the lid off of things here and got us national attention. But it turns out that there's a war for our children. And I know that you're well aware of that. And critical race theory is what we started on, but it turns out it's really just one battlefront. Every war has many battlefronts and many lines of conflict, right? And when you take a step back and realize, well, you've got CRT, you've got comprehensive sex education, that's, you're familiar with that. You've got social emotional learning, you've got gender ideology and the LGBTQ ideology push. You've got the pornographic library books, and you've got straight up Marxism push in the schools. That's seven battlefronts. And if you list those out to any parent, they start to get this kind of far off look because it's too much. It's too much. So I'd encourage anybody to visit our website, momsforlibertywcwhiskeycharlie.org. And we have a resource library where we are taking on one battlefront or one topic per month and really focusing on it and creating a parent toolkit and a 101 course and many other things, you know, assigned readings and just trying to break it down into bite-sized pieces so that parents can understand all these little battlefronts, because nobody is going to fight the war for their children but the parent.
That's right. In the 90s, a movement began in the U.S. to establish national education standards for students across the country. Do you think George W. Bush's Common Core was the camel's nose under the tent, and now the big business interests in school publishing are running with it, and the teachers unions and teachers themselves are driving all of this confusion?
I think it was the camel's nose, and then I think under Obama the whole camel went in.
That was the whole thing. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And for those that don't know, Robin spent nearly 3 years as a B-1 instructor pilot and chief of the air-to-ground weapons test division at the 28th Test and Evaluation Squadron, so not someone to trifle with. So really no match for Penny Schwinn if she wants this fight, right?
I would hope not, but we failed to get Governor Lee to do anything about that.
Well, it isn't over yet. Every school year is a new one. But Robin, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We are at the end here. I can't wait to have you on again. There's so much more to know and learn. I want to know, can you tell our listeners in the final seconds here how they can get activated with you, where to go to find you, follow you, and more about Moms for Liberty?
So the national website is momsforliberty.org. And you can find our chapter website through that site, or you can just tag a WC at the end of it. So momsforlibertywc.org, and you will find the Williamson County website. And we have really poured a lot of investment and time and money into that website to create kind of a toolkit for parents that will equip them and empower them to advocate for their children.
That's great. And it really does feel like ground zero for the movement. So we really thank you for your service and thank you for what you're doing for our kids. And happy new year and best wishes for 2023 to keep this thing going. And being a busy mom, I know it's taxing, but we need you out there doing it for us. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show where we cover what we just heard and anything else on our minds today. Steve, what'd you think of Robin and Moms for Liberty?
Well, I just want to say that she is doing a fantastic job, and I wanted to let everybody know that they're going to have a meeting. Their next educational seminar will be on January 24th, 6 p.m. at the Generations Church in Franklin, Tennessee. They will be going over the Restorative Justice 101 component of their seven-part series. Folks, you need to know this, and I was telling Steve, I need a minute here just to share. You want to know why they're breaking the minds of the youth through violence, hypersexuality, hyper-racism, CRT, and the rest of this? Is it all goes back to the art of war. And Sun Tzu says, under Attack by Stratagem, number 2, supreme excellence consists in breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. And that's right. What's being done. Nobody's fighting. There's not a bullet shot. COVID 2020 shut churches down, shut the public disarray down, shut corporations down. Not one bullet was shot. They leveled the whole world, and now they're bringing in all this stuff. So it's an ongoing battle after battle after battle that we're under.
Add fentanyl to the mix, and we are ripe for the picking. Let's lighten things up for a moment. I know science is no laughing matter, but let's frame this segment with this. Please play clip number 1.
Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rich. Provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed. Thank you, brother.
Or sister.
Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right.
Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
You can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus gonna gestate? You're gonna keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Monty Python, 1975. They must have known this was coming. You ever watch those, Steve?
Oh, I used to watch Monty Python's Flying Circus every Thursday night. Endlessly. Oh boy. Yeah.
It was good when it was funny, but now it's reality. This headline, DEI, or as I like to call it, DIE, in science publications has surged by more than 4,000%.
An ideological intensification study by the National Association of Scholars documents and quantifies that growing prevalence of DEI-associated language in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM, fields in the United States, per the NAS, between 2010 and 2021, DEI in education rose by 2,000+%. Our findings show that DEI-related language has increased significantly in all STEM sectors over the last decade and exponentially. So within the last few years, DEI indicators linked with STEM have risen 2,600% compared to a decade ago on university websites, with similar trends observed in social media content. This increase has been catalyzed in part by significant increases in government spending. The two principal funders of scientific research, the National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation, increased DEI-related research spending by roughly 300% in 1 year alone, 2020 to 2021. And publications are positively doing their part. This increase is also visible in scientific publications, with DEI-related language rising up to 4,200% between 2010 and 2021. See a problem here? Let's play clip number... Go ahead.
Yeah, big problem.
Clip number two, please.
And I live in Franconia. I would like to address some concerns within the district. The picture I have with me tonight is a picture of my daughter when she entered ninth grade here at Satterton. As a teacher myself for 12 years, I taught math, I taught science, all the necessary things that a child needs when they're in school. But more than that, I taught children to be strong and courageous, to be confident, to think for themselves. So I looked up some facts and research about how many times you have to repeat to someone something before they begin to believe it. And the facts tell us, and the research in science tells us, that for a child to believe something, you have to tell them 14 times before they start to believe it. For adults, it's only 7 times before they start to believe it. So my child entered ninth grade here at Satterton. She wanted to be a camp counselor at a Christian camp. It was her dream for 3 or 4 years. This was my daughter in ninth grade. By the end of the year, 3 of the teachers that she had in her classrooms were repeating things to her. She began cutting herself. She became depressed. By the end of the school year, she was also calling herself by a different name. This parent was not informed of these things. I came in for an open house for art, and I saw her name was something different. I am her parent. And as a parent, I should be informed of these things. This is a mental health issue that needed to be addressed. Throughout the years, we had many conversations, many discussions. So her second year, under the disguise of a fundraiser, one of the teachers who was encouraging her in these behaviors also took these children and had their heads shaved for a fundraiser so they'd look more like what they identified with. I just want to say that here I am today, and my child has now removed her breasts, is taking testosterone. This causes atrophy. It causes the muscles in her vagina to collapse to the point of incontinence. But these are not the facts that anyone shares with you.
I'm sorry.
And it only takes 14 times for a child to start believing this. I'm asking this board to be monitoring what your teachers are saying to these children.
Wow.
Powerful stuff. A lie told often enough becomes the truth. Vladimir Lenin. So we've seen evidence of general injections in headlines, collegeized teaching math and science through the prism of colonialism and white supremacy. Medical journal apologizes for its empowering call to bodies with vaginas. To root out racism, elite high school for science and technology ends merit-based admissions. Professor claims there are two sexes, all but one of her graduate students walk out. Harvard professor insists there are two sexes. Colleague is appalled. Professor gets kicked out of neuroscience group after suggesting there are two sexes. That's more than two lies or seven lies or 14 lies. That is a lie told often enough. Let's play clip number three.
Onslaught of anti-LGBTQI plus actions at the state levels across the United States, and they are dangerous to the public health. The positive value of gender-affirming care for youth and adults is not in scientific or medical dispute. So we all need to work together to get our voices out in the front line. We need to get our voices in the public eye, and we know how effective our medical community can be talking to communities, whether it's at town halls, schools, conversations with others. And we need to use our clinicians' voice to collectively advocate for our tech companies to create a healthier, cleaner information environment. During a moment when public trust in our leaders and our information is very challenged, the healthcare worker community, the medical community, does, I believe, maintain a high degree of trust, and we have to utilize that. We have to utilize it effectively.
What do you think of that message?
Well, it reminds me of a better to have a millstone hung around your neck than cause and tossed into the deepest part of the sea than to cause one of these little ones to stumble.
Very true. Very true. That was Rachel Levine, the very first transgender assistant health, I forget the title, but something in the nature of telling our kids that it's okay to do this and trying to
unhealthy department, Steve. Unhealthy department.
Unhealthy department, yes. Filthy department. Back to the report. NAS credits one particular social element for STEM's DEI surge from a December 7th press release. This is 3 weeks ago. The study finds that colleges and university website incorporating DEI and STEM terms were 26 times more frequent in 2021 than they were in 2010. NSF funding for so-called anti-racist themes more than tripled from 2020 to 2021. Similar trends are visible among the scientific literature. The study notes that much of this increase was likely triggered by the Black Lives Matter movement, as evidenced by the rapid spike in incidents in the summer of 2020. Academia has been inspired by that year in multiple ways. At the University of Florida, for instance, faculty formed a 2020 alliance dedicated to the mere survival of Black folks, spelled F-O-L-X, folks, in light of countless murders of Black people at the hands of white supremacy. Didn't read those headlines. If extinction looms, it seems sensible its prevention would take precedent over science. With America's STEM revolution lead us to better days? Either way, one thing's for sure, not everyone's doing it. Georgetown University's Center for Security and Emerging Technology embedded the results succinctly in its title, China is Fast Outpacing U.S. STEM PhD Growth. Since the mid-2000s, CSET notes, China consistently produces more STEM doctorates than the United States, and the gap likely to widen over the next 5 years, is likely to widen. By 2025, 2 years away, the organization projects there will be more than 77,000 Chinese-produced STEM PhD graduates per year. The United States is set to serve up 40,000. According to an article in AmericanMind.org, rising wokeness in medical schools is a problem for patients everywhere. Contrary to popular belief, the United States is no longer home to the best education system in the world. According to the World Top 20 Project, an international organization that gathers educational data from more than 200 countries, the U.S. lags well behind countries like Finland, Denmark, and South Korea. From elementary schools to colleges and universities, the U.S. education system is in crisis. Academic standards have drastically slipped, with a woke madness gripping classrooms across the country, and no school is immune, not even the most prestigious medical school in America. Some highlights from AAMC's report include faculty litmus tests. 43% of medical schools have promotion and tenure policies that specifically reward faculty scholarship and service on DEI topics. Remember what Robin said? Political advocacy, 75% advocate for policies and or legislation at a local, state, or federal level related to its diversity, inclusion, and equity mission. Affirmative action, 100% have admissions policies and practices for encouraging a diverse class of students, e.g. holistic admissions policy. Diversity over merit is faculty hires. 67% require departments, units to assemble a diverse pool of candidates for faculty positions. Wasting money, 85% have taken action to modify communications, branding, icons, or displays to better reflect DEI goals. Politicized leadership, 99% of institutional leaders are active within local, regional, and national forums to promote equity, diversity, and inclusion. Doubling down, 85% of senior leaders use demographic data to promote change within the institution. Schools. As more medical schools hop on the diversity train, more Americans are in danger of putting their lives in the hands of ill-trained doctors. The country's healthcare sector is already a hot mess. Reckless, unscientific, unmeritocratic initiatives are making things considerably worse. As per the New York Post, a recent study by the UK campaign group Sex Matters found puberty blockers and hormone treatments do no more to improve teens' mental health than a placebo. And yet, as the EPPC numbers show, demand continues to soar. Why? The driver seems to be a toxic blend of teen angst, educator activism, and internet addiction. It is no coincidence that in the decades since smartphones became widespread, the number of kids identifying as trans has rocketed. And over the same period, the gender breakdown has reversed, from mostly boys to overwhelmingly girls, a group historically prone to body issues and social contagions. According to the Global Market Insights, the market is in trans medicine is predicted to be worth $1.5 billion worldwide by 2026. Gender surgery alone can cost $30,000. And when hormone treatments cost upwards of $1,500 a year for life, you'd be crazy not to catch them young. No wonder providers are suddenly everywhere. The first American pediatric gender clinic opened in 2007, and there are now more than 50. Per a recent report from the American Principles Project, big pharma firms such as AbbVie, which makes puberty blockers, dig deep to ensure nothing gets in the way of this lucrative market by donating to lawmakers and nonprofits, many of which go on to campaign for measures that further entrench gender medicine. What happens to the kids lured into the maw of this monster? Before their brains are even fully developed, they're taking drugs that will permanently change them, whether they regret it or not. Leptron, the cancer drug used off-label to block normal puberty, has side effects including brittle bones, cognitive impairment, and even blindness. Advocates refuse to admit that the sharp rise in the use of puberty blockers may not be due to pent-up demand, but because of peer pressure, anorexia, and mental health challenges besides gender dysphoria, and that therapy, not drugs, is a better answer for most teens. I know this is long-winded, but I really want to get this out to everybody. Let's play clip number 4. It's a good one, so I hope we get it.
And while I'm waiting, I just want to say that all warfare is based on deception, according to the Art of War. So when we have been talking about all these deceptive practices, it's amazing, Steve, that the Scholastic Books is a pipeline into the school libraries, households, millions of people being reached in a systematical way approach. Public education, again, has been 6 hours of your kid. If I was the father of that daughter, I would have yanked her out of school, taken her out of state. And I do actually know of a couple people doing that right now who are fighting that kind of gender issue with their child. And
you're talking to one right now.
Yes, you did. You took him out of the thing. And Steve, I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to get
We'll have to skip it for now. But you know, how many times did she say it takes to get a kid to believe it?
14 times.
14 times. I think I read like 10,000. So these kids are being bombarded. And there's a bill that would have banned biological males from playing on girls' sports teams in Ohio that failed to pass in the state's General Assembly. The amendment said no school or athletic conference shall permit individuals of the male sex to participate on athletic teams or in athletic competitions designated only for participants of the female sex. 18 states have banned transgender students from competing on teams that align with their gender identity. A federal appeals court dismissed a challenge to Connecticut's policy of allowing transgender girls to compete in girls' high school sports, rejecting arguments by four female runners who said they were unfairly forced to race against transgender athletes. It's tough out there being a kid. They're making it worse. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone again to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, and hit the subscribe button. And thanks, as always, for doing it. All that I am or ever hope to be, I owe to my angel mother, Abraham Lincoln. When you are a mother, you are never really alone in your thoughts. A mother always has to think twice, once for herself and once for her child, Sophia Loren. Named by the American Film Institute as one of the greatest female stars of classical Hollywood cinema. God could not be everywhere, and therefore he made mothers. Rudyard Kipling, author of The Jungle Book. Well, God can be everywhere, but it's a nice sentiment. Maybe he should have said angels and mothers, or angel mother, like Lincoln said. Well, that, my friends, is it for another episode. Hope you liked it. Thank you, Robin Steenman, for looking out for our kids and the future of America, no less. See you January 24, 6 p.m. at Generations Church in Franklin. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the MillCreekViewOnline.com. Peace in our time.
Biden, did you know that your policies would drive us underwater? Biden, did you know that your policies would trans our sons and daughters? Did you know that your policies will punish what is true? The church that you subscribe to does not subscribe to you. Biden, did you know? Oh. Biden, did you know that your baby boy made shady deals in Ukraine? Biden, did you know that your baby boy loves Parmesan and cocaine? Did you know that you should?
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.